WWO Radio.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com. Today's date is the 27th of November 2015. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I have with me today the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Mr. Dennis Wise. And how are you doing today? Well, this evening, Dennis, on a Friday evening. This is our first evening live broadcast, which hopefully is going to be at a better time for the listeners. How are you feeling today, Dennis?
I'm feeling fine. This is a more respectable hour, I would imagine, for most people, myself included.
I'm usually a bit more awake in the mornings, but I've just had my dinner, so I'm feeling quite awake and as if we've got quite a lot to discuss this week as well. You tell me that you've been working on the next part of Communism by the Back Door, but instead of going to part number 13, you've moved to part number 14, Dennis. Do you want to explain why that is and a little bit about what you've been looking into for part 14?
Yeah, well, part 13, I was going to continue the genocide thing, which I still intend to do. It's just that I was hot for all the research that I gathered to do the next part before that one, which was all about the neocons, because that's central to the whole documentary. I mean, when it's called Communism by the Back Door, this part really does explain why, how, and the truth of that statement.
Well, yeah, and it was also pretty pertinent with what's going on today. I would have thought with the neocons, just today, you know, they're banging the drums for more war and wanting to go into Syria. One of the things that gets me about it is the invading army is actually in Europe. It's not in Syria. The invading army is already in Europe. They're inside our gates. They're attacking us, atrocities in Paris. And what do the government do? They say, well, we've got to go and attack Syria. They say nothing about the enemy that's actually in Europe, that's attacking us in Europe. They're not going to go attacking the Muslims who are attacking us in Europe. They're going to go and bomb Syria so that they can help other Muslims in Syria. So and that's the neocons down to a T, I think, really, is to helping other people rather than white people.
Well, I think the thing what you're down to a T with the neocons is they love war. And I'm not exaggerating. This goes right back to World War II. Because back in World War II, the godfather of the neocons, a guy called Crystal, a Jew, he accepted what Roosevelt had at the time, his policies, which were all socialist. And as you know, as the war developed, the bombing of Dresden was particularly horrific. But I also found out as well that there's been some study by the John Birch Society over the years into the closing days of World War II. And that's when Japan actually wanted to surrender in January, which Roosevelt got the message from MacArthur, but put it in the bottom drawer and went over to Europe and sold out Europe with Yalta. By the time August come round, Japan did surrender to the exact same terms as was given in January, which logistics means there would be no need to bomb every single city in Japan, firebomb. There would be no need for the island hopping, and obviously no need for the atomic bombs. So it's been an interesting little bit of research.
So why do you think they continued the war then, if they would have accepted the peace treaty, the peace demands, or the peace treaty months earlier? What reason do you think led them to continuing to do all that and bombing all those people? For me, I think it was so they could use the atomic bomb.
Well, I think they obviously wanted to use the atomic bomb to warn Stalin, my opinion. but also for the annihilation of the Japanese and the Germans, just to have, you know, just for going up against them. I think this New World Order are quite brutal and ruthless and have yet to lose a war, to be honest, if you look into to details of what comes out of the Rothschilds and Britain and this American alliance. So, yeah, but it was war what was unnecessary. I mean, even the ones that did the complete surrender of Germany, which again forced the Germans to carry on fighting. So, yeah, and this obviously goes on then into Vietnam. And then, like I said, at some point, in the research, it comes to today's neocons like Cheney, Rumsfeld and, Bush. And, I know this might sound a surprise to a lot of people out there, but they are communists. Neocons are actually, socialist, internationalist, and Trotskyites, then, you know, it's communism by the back door.
There's just a front that they claim to be conservative and claim to be conserving traditional values. They like to shout a lot about American values and over here in Britain about British values, but these values got nothing in common with original American values or original British values. They got more in common, with, as you say, with socialism, promoting equality and open borders, enforcing equality on people that don't want it, forcing homosexuality on countries that don't want it, forcing feminism on countries that don't want it. Yeah, this is what the wars are for, isn't it? It's not to free people. It's not so that people can actually decide what they want to do in their own country. 86% of Syria voted for Bashar al-Assad, and yet they're still on about taking out Bashar al-Assad. This is a way that it's just the way that I see it, and I think most people are now seeing it like this as well. That it's all just a front, and it's all just lies that they're saying, and all they're interested in doing is bombing people, flattening people into submission, and then putting in puppet governments.
Yeah, for this new world order. I mean, if you look at there was intentions of joining up Mexico, Canada, and America into one big continent. And I still think that's on the table as far as I can gather. Cause we've got this trade agreement there, which is Clinton, another Rothschild, choice, by the way, a Rhodes scholar, set up back in the '90s. And I was talking to somebody the other day and I just for a bit of fun, I just said to him, tell me at a guess how many countries in Europe have given up the sovereignty to join the EU. And, it wasn't a million miles out, but it was out far enough. And to date, I think it's 28 countries have given up the sovereignty.
Well, it's every single one. Every single one that's a part of the European Union has given up their sovereignty to it. And that's why we can't defend our borders.
Came out a while back as well, didn't it? But other than that, the rest of them are all, like I said, it's based on the United Nations, which is based on the Communist Manifesto, and Europe is in itself the new Soviet Union, where you've just got X amount of countries with no borders, just one big landmass. And people fail to see it. I mean, in this country, they're pretty good at hiding things. I mean, I can remember when we first went into what they called the common market, and they said it was for trade, and so they dumped New Zealand and dumped Australia, and said that it'd be better for Britain and closer trade with Europe, etc. When all the while, it's to get these borders down across the world, including Africa and probably China as well. And the United States and South America, Canada, into one, well, to split them up into kind of four or five units, but so they're easier to control. But at the end, they'll be marshaled by United Nations troops, one world army. They'll have one religion for all, which will be communism.
Well, UNESCO, the part of the United Nations, was based in Moscow. That's where they made their declaration that all the races were equal. And in the Soviet Union, what you had people ruling it and that couldn't be changed by the people. It had a veneer of democracy, claimed to be democratic. But just like it is today in the EU, the real people that are pulling the strings, you can't change them. You can't move them. You've got these people that just turn up in the European Parliament, that get voted for, and they just get 5 minutes that they can speak for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. They're glossed over, and they don't actually have any real say. And yet there's a big thing about the fact that we vote for them and it's democratic, but they don't, and they don't have any say in it. The people that have the real say in it are the minority groups. So the minority groups have actually got more power over our nations now than our own national governments, because they gave their sovereignty over to the EU. When the EU comes in with the Human Rights Act, and you get a minority group that says, well, our rights are being infringed, then that country, every country, has to do what that minority group wants them to, regardless of whether it interferes with their own laws, such as laws to free speech in Britain that have been trampled over.
Well, free speech apart from if you're a Nazi. Holocaust laws still apply, which brings me to the fact that the 85-year-old lady in Germany was in prison for 10 months this week, maybe last week, can't remember, which I find intolerable, really. They bring out these laws for everybody by National Socialists. So, but that's not surprising, because as I've always said on this program, communism, one world war, two. And at the end of the day, these neocons follow Trotsky. And for those people who may not know Trotsky, is Trotsky was in partnering crime with Lenin, when they took over the, Soviet Union, the Russian Revolution. And he was one of the first leaders of the founding leader of, the Red Army. Stalin later, fell out with him, he had to move out of the country in exile, ended up in Mexico, where one of the agents from Stalin hit him over the head with a pickaxe, and he died. But this is the guy they follow. There was two sets of the university in New York, in New York, where at lunchtime they had Alcove A, which was Stalinist, and Alcove B, which were the Trotskyites. Most Jews in them days, back in the 30s, were communist, and a lot of Jews went to this college, and this is where it all came from. And how they got into power was when Jimmy Carter came in the 70s, he wanted to clean house, because the CIA had caused that much disruption around the world, like he just wanted to clear it all up. And in doing so, he let something like between 500 and 2,000 CIAs loose, off the books. And one of them was George Bush Senior. He started a campaign by trying to get rid of Carter, over a number of years. And that involved these Trotskyites, or neocons, who eventually found the power base in Washington, the likes of Wolfowitz and Cheney and the rest of them. They invaded Iraq in 91 under George Bush Sr. once he was back in power. And they wanted to go again, but he got beat by Clinton. And so obviously it's all the same, there's no difference. So they were going to get Clinton to invade Iraq. But unfortunately, he had problems with Monica Lewinsky and all that kind of carry on. So they had to wait then until George Bush Jr. came in. And then they set off again with plans to invade Iraq a year at least before. An email was leaked where Blair and Bush had agreed to invade Iraq 1 year before, and that Blair was going to spin it to the UK population. And the rest is history.
Well, what do you see as being the main difference between Trotskyites and Marxists? Because my understanding of it was that the Trotskyites tried to be more communist than all the other communists. They tried to outdo the other communists, and Trotsky was telling them that he was the real essence of communism, and that's why they should be following him. So when I see people that are called Trotskyites in the Labour government, they're the ones that try to be the most SJW out of the lot, the ones that are asking for the most feminism or the most equality, trying to outdo all the others. That's the way I see it. How do you, how would you define the Trotskyites, Dennis, as opposed to Marxists?
Well, to be honest, I've yet to research that. I mean, there could be a big personality thing as well, because Stalin, you know, was one ruthless son of a bitch, and although Trotsky, no doubt, was ruthless, probably not as ruthless as what Stalin was. But there must have been a power struggle there, obviously, and like I said, he ended up being wiped out anyway. But I'm going to have to look into that in more detail, but certainly I think you're on the right lines there. I mean, but just the fact that we were actually talking about Leon Trotsky and the neocons and what's going on in the world today just goes to show the influence of what communism has. Because at first, like I said, you go on YouTube comments and you'll see that, you know, Bush is a Nazi and this kind of carry on. And no one seems to realize that it's not what the Gestapo or the SS, but instead it's the Cheka and the KGB. And people obviously have been, it's all been hidden from everybody, especially in this country. I mean, it's amazing in this country what people believe. Some people even believe that the Queen has no power, when the Prime Minister has to go around and ask her permission, for just one instance. So, yeah, there's a lot of hidden stuff. And that, just talking about the royal family just for a second, because I will probably do a piece on them as well. The silence is deafening. When she looks out from her palace and looks at London, no longer an English city, and no one from the royal family has commented on it. The only comment I saw last week was from Charles, who was harping on about this global warming. That in itself, you know, the silence is deafening, which means to me that that involves and the Zionist and possibly even Jewish.
Well, I think they're definitely traitors, and Tony Blair did away with the traitors law. So you can't lawfully take these treacherous politicians and try them for treason. He did away with the treason law. And to have royalty that, as you say, just does nothing while her subjects are gradually being replaced, while her capital city is now only 40% got Londoners in it, and the rest are all from the dredges from the third world. I mean, that just shows you that they're traitors. Right, all of them at the top are traitors, basically. They slowly work their way into those positions. They've got rid of the royals that were of the people and promoted and put the ones that agreed to go along with the bankers' designs in power. I think a part of that was putting a female on the throne as well. They got rid of the king, the male one, and put a female on the throne, and then promoted feminism and Maggie Thatcher.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because they've changed the law, haven't they? That normally it's the firstborn son, which is the heir, and now they've changed that to just the firstborn.
Yeah, so they can weasel it so that they get more women on the throne, I think, so that they can push forward feminist agenda of replacing the men and confusing everyone about their genders, getting the women out to work, making it so that the kids have to be brought up by people that aren't known by the family, these babysitters, government-sponsored nurseries that are going to start brainwashing them from an early age. If you want to do all that, you've got to get the women out to work. And the way to do that is to tell them that they're being oppressed by their husbands. And if you've got the main woman in charge or the main royalty, the monarch, is a woman, then it's all that much easier to persuade her to go along with it. I mean, she just seems to go along with these laws that they put in front of her, these snooping laws. And I say that the main thing that they're going on about at the moment is getting permission to go in there and attack Syria, when we are the ones that are being attacked here in our own lands by these Muslims. Syria isn't attacking us. ISIS in Syria isn't attacking us. It's ISIS in Europe that are attacking us. And all of this is due to this. It's all been brought to a head by this this incident in Turkey with these Turks shooting down the Russian plane. Someone in the chat room was asking what you thought of this and what your opinions were on this incident, Dennis. What do you think about it?
Well, okay. Well, the problem is that there's wars going on within the war. Russia was out to bomb ISIS from the beginning, but also take out the rebels because they want to keep Assad in power. In fact, they're probably the only legal people in there at the moment because they have been invited in. So you've got Turkey then, who is reputedly buying on the black market the oil off ISIS, who the Russians are out to bomb the oil fields to stop them from, because they are the richest terrorist organization in the world with all this oil. And then you've got the Kurds on the ground who are fighting ISIS, and Turkey have a beef with the Kurds. So you could really say that Turkey prefer ISIS to Russia and the Kurds, as do most, you know, America and the UK. Now, Cameron's yet again trying to get planes into Syria and reckons that he can do it legally. I don't see how we can do that with permission from Assad. But anyway, the point there, I believe, is just to get airstrikes in there so they won't leave. Once they're in, they'll probably stay in to try and remove him. So, like I say, it's a bit of a, I don't know, I suppose the people on the street, the ordinary people who don't really go too deep into it, are just really confused to the point that they just believe what Sky say and Russia's the enemy, and Cameron really does want to bomb ISIS, when all the time they've funded them along with America and Israel and created this Frankenstein monster, which has decided to take things in its own hands, which is usually the case when the CIA do these kind of things. So I don't think I've cleared the point that much, but hopefully I've done a little bit to clear it.
Well, yeah, I think the only reason they're talking about going in there now is because Russia has gone in there and is having some success. Because Russia has taken out, or according to them, they've taken out 480 terrorist targets that they've bombed to smithereens.
Right.
While this is going on, you've got France and Britain have been trying to form a coalition against ISIS. So they spent months trying to form this coalition against ISIS. They're still having meetings now, forming their coalition and deciding what to do in Syria. Mm. While that's going on, Putin is clearing the field for them, basically. He's clearing the field of all the terrorists. Yeah. And what they mean by gaining permission, they mean permission from the United Nations. They don't mean permission from Assad. I mean, permission from the Union of Soviet Nations, basically.
That's legal anyway. It's a sovereign country. So, you know, the United Nations don't really have any say in that. It's Assad who is the legal government. Obama's been pretty quiet on all this because all the killings in Paris came from the fact that he funded ISIS in the first place. So, it really is a web of deceit and lies. But the one person in the whole unit of it all, with any sense, is of course Putin. Because I'm quite sure if John McCain, say for instance, was president of the United States, and Turkey shot down an American plane, killed the pilot and one of the rescuers, and blew up one of the rescuers' helicopters, they'd be at war now with Turkey. Whereas Putin, he's trying to avoid this, I think, imminent World War III, but he's doing his best to avoid it because he realizes that it's going to be a nuclear war and there's going to be huge casualties on both sides. But believe you me, the New World Order, as always, will press and press and press until it gets to a point. I mean, they did it with Hitler. They said, you know, he doesn't want war, but he's going to get war. And it's the same thing with Putin. I'm convinced. But this moment in time, France, sharing some information, you know, with Russia as they go out to strike ISIS. But that's not going to stop Putin getting the rebels, and that's just going to annoy NATO.
Well, I think Turkey are playing a much larger role in this than has previously been spoken about. They're buying all the oil. They're funding all the terrorist groups. I mean, that the group that shot down the unarmed parachuting pilots, unarmed, parachuting down for an airplane in distress, war crime, they shot them with a missile that was given to them, an American missile given to them by Turkey. Yeah. Now, that little part of Syria there, it's a tiny little corner there, so it's very hard to maneuver in if you're in an airplane. Yeah. So obviously, there's a high concentration of terrorists in that area because they think they're safe in that area. So Turkey doesn't want the Russian planes to be anywhere near there because that's where they can do some real serious damage to these terrorist groups. So the fact that Turkey has got so riled up about this that it's going to shoot down an American plane, a Russian plane, it just shows that they've got, you know, some big stakes in this. They've got a lot resting on this happening and taking down Assad, a lot more than we've been told about. And all the oil is apparently going straight through from ISIS through Turkey to the rest of the world. So that's the route that it's going through.
And ISIS fighters have gone through Turkey as well, you know, to get into Syria. But let's not forget that in the past year alone, Turkey's invaded Greek airspace 2,000 times.
Well, this is the other thing. You're talking about just going into airspace for a few seconds. Now, that's not an immediate threat. That's not an immediate threat to Turkey. I mean, America has had to say, oh, well, Turkey has the right to defend itself. Well, that wasn't an attack. There was no need to defend itself. And if Turkey's got the right to defend itself, then so is Syria. So is Bashar al-Assad. So are the Palestinians.
Exactly.
You know, this is what we hear. Israel has a right to defend itself. That's what we hear when Israel does these unspeakable crimes. And now we hear of Turkey carrying out unspeakable crimes. And we get told, well, Turkey has the right to defend itself. And don't forget, the Turks are supposed to be our allies. They're supposed to be part of NATO. If anybody's moderate Muslims, it's the Turks. Well, the whole world has just seen how these moderate Muslims behave. They shout Allah Akbar and they shoot unarmed pilots in distress. In an SOS, you know, situation, bailing out from an aeroplane.
Exactly, yeah.
Instead of rendering assistance, they shoot them out of the sky.
It's a basic prisoner of war. It's a basic prisoner of war situation, which was violated, but nobody from the West has even mentioned that. The thing is that Putin knows that he needs to confront this, try and stop it at source, because if Syria falls, the next step, they'll all be at Russia's door. And he knows all this, and that's why he's putting everything into it to, but I mean, he doesn't want to get bogged down into an Afghanistan war like the Soviets did, back a few years ago. You know, he's quite sensible, and that's why he's asking for a coalition. But it's a difficult one because, you know, the Western people are out to get him anyway, and out to get Assad. So it's difficult not to see this happening again. It wouldn't surprise me.
Well, part of it is, another side to it is that there are a lot of prophecies about Russia coming into Europe and chastising Europe. I was listening to Bishop Williamson the other day, the Catholic bishop that talks a lot of sense. Yeah. He was saying that he's half expecting this to happen, that there will be a third world war. Russia will come into Europe and there will be bloodshed. And we deserve it, basically, for all our immorality, promotion of homosexuality, promotion of feminism, promotion of race mixing, allowing our countries to be invaded by the third world. And Russia will come in, take over, and then they will cleanse the heresy out of their own Orthodox Church, and you'll have an Orthodox Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church itself will cleanse all the heresy out from it. And he was saying that this is all being prophesied by these Catholic mystics over the years, fitting in with the Bible as well. It was just interesting to hear this coming from a Catholic bishop that's obviously following this and thinking that this is a possible scenario of what could happen. And I'm just surprised at Turkey being so brazen about this, because they're going to look really bad in the eyes of the rest of the world. The rest of Europe are going to be saying, why are we allied with Turkey? Hang on a minute. You know, they've shot down these Russians who are the good guys who are fighting against the bad guys. They're basically saying, you know, we are supporting the bad guys in Turkey. Hello, Dennis. Can you still hear me?
You're back.
Yeah. Did I cut out then for a minute?
Yeah, I think the powers that be didn't like what they were hearing and cut out. Yeah,
we've got the odd funny noise coming from the microphone there as well. Maybe it's something to do with Skype. We may be having the Skype problems. I've actually got, I think we might have, somebody sent us a contact request at the other Skype. Right. Yeah. Saying that we've got a slight problem with the uplink. No, it's looking okay. Looking like it should be going out okay. Yeah, it's all, everything's looking all right there. I'm hoping it's all right now and we've gone back to
it. When you're talking about these subjects.
Yeah, well, he's saying the music stopped now. Well, it might have started because I answered his contact request. You never know.
Why no, you don't. Well, like I said, I've done several radio programs and, you know, very rarely do we not get some kind of interference.
Well, we might as well move on to some of these questions because we've had a couple of questions that have been sent in. I've got one from Axe to Grind. And he said, did many of Hitler's inner circle renounce National Socialism near the end of the war? Because I think this is something that the liberals have said to him, that they've tried to say that people renounce National Socialism at the end of the war. But did that actually happen? Did many of Hitler's inner circle renounce him?
The research that I did in Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Never Told, even though Hitler had fallen out with Goering, Goering actually spoke up for Hitler at the Nuremberg trials when he dominated the Nuremberg trials. Such was his personality and his brain was quick. So in that instance, I can't recall any of them doing such a thing. And for people who say that the National Socialists weren't Christians, there was a number of National Socialists who were Christian, who was hung at Nuremberg, actually took the last rites before they was hung. I think it was only, you know, one or two that didn't. So that's another point for people to bear in mind as well.
Well, I think that brings us to another question as well, or that you were talking about there, about the swastika being a Christian symbol. Did you have a letter from somebody asking about the swastika or something?
YouTube comment, yeah. Somebody was... Well, there was of the opinion, like everybody else, that it was just an evil symbol. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that it's been in our history for thousands of years and goes back beyond probably. And in all natures, you know, all cultures, and Christian, culture as well. And in the documentary, Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Ever Told, he designed the flag, to rival the hammer and sickle of the communists. The National Socialists didn't have a flag to rally around as such, and so I designed that one. And again, like I said, there's a Christian bearing on it.
Well, it's got to be one of the coolest flags there is. I mean, it really sort of grabs your attention. I think that's why it was red, white, and black. It was to grab the attention against the red flags of the communists. The swastika itself, you find it wherever white people have been. Wherever we've had civilizations, you'll find traces of a swastika, various different types of it. But it's always basically a spinning cross. And it looks like it's what it symbolizes is the resurrection, the sun going down and then coming back up again. So it goes down into the dark and then it comes back up. And we could tell that because sometimes they have arrows pointing to show which direction that this cross is going in. And you can see it evolving from symbols for the sun and the sun going down to coming back up again. So it's a symbol for resurrection and coming back after death, basically. So, and then you've got the cross after Christianity. The cross becomes a symbol for the same. And obviously the swastika is used for that. So you see the swastika in churches and you see it on... there's a picture of the swastika at the Linz Abbey in your documentary, and there are carved swastikas on lots of old stone crosses in Britain that are, you know, over 1,000 years old, Anglo-Saxon crosses and stones that all have these swastikas on them. So it was a Christian symbol, and before that it was a symbol for resurrection, and right from before Christ and after Christ it was used by by white people in their civilizations. And as the white people left those areas, or as they blended in with the Aborigines from those areas, the symbols remain there. So you still have the swastika used as a good luck charm and a symbol for purity in India, in Buddhist use, yeah, and well, other religions.
I pointed this particular person in the direction. I just said to him, if you go to Google and put in swastika Christian Bishop Coventry, it's going to take you to Coventry Cathedral with this bishop, Christian bishop, as a swastika in his headwear. And also, it shows other places in Christian churches where the swastika either on the floor, in a pattern on the floor, or in the pews and part of the masonry. But I also heard that it was also used amongst the early Christians, and it says like it was kind of a disguised cross during the persecution, hence its name. I can't speak Latin, but I'll try. Crux dissimulata, also known as the crux gammata, from the fact that it makes up four Greek gammas. If that makes sense to you.
Yeah, well, I've just heard somebody else saying, does it matter the symbolism of the way that it's turning? Well, I don't think it really matters either way, to be honest, because one way is how it looks is the sun removing around the earth and the direction of the sun going around the earth as you look at the sun. And the other direction is the way that it's the earth moving around the sun. Both is happening. One is the way that we look at it. The other way is the way that it would look at if you're looking at the solar system from outside, you know, because as the earth moves around the sun, or whether the sun moves around the earth, it's sort of both ways. It's basically what it's showing is that the sun goes down into the dark and then it comes back up again into the light, basically. So it's a symbol for the resurrection.
If you believe, the Jews don't believe in our God, I think it is the one religion what doesn't use the swastika. And I think I told you before about the documentary I once saw when, they were trying to entice a rabbi into a Hindu temple, and maybe 50 yards from the door, he started to sweat just like a vampire would with a cross. And when he got closer to the temple, there was about 100 little swastikas on the door. So it has this effect on them, which again is proof that it's a righteous religious symbol.
Well, the Jews can't stand to see crosses. They're supposed to spit on them, urinate on them, curse them, break them down. They really can't stand to see crosses. And I think that's probably the origin of why the vampires are frightened of the cross. It comes from aversion. Jews' aversion to the cross.
And I think a while back they tried to get a movement going to ban the swastika in India, because obviously Hindu religion is tied up greatly in that. If this new world order ever does come off, I'm pretty sure they're going to ban the swastika worldwide. I mean, that is the reason they banned it in Germany anyway, because, you know, enemy of communism and a Christian thing to it. So that's something to watch out for. But I do know not that long ago, like, you know, maybe 18 months, 2 years ago, they were trying to get someone to go to try and ban it in India. So, which, you know, kind of floundered.
Well, they would have real problems trying to do that. But they have tried to ban the Celtic cross just recently. They've produced that on the SBLC site. The Celtic cross is a hate symbol. Well, the Celtic cross is a symbol for Welsh heritage. The Welsh heritage have the Celtic cross as their symbol for all their monuments, the ancient monuments, castles.
It's a bit like sort of flag, isn't it? You know, there's kind of a war and all that kind of thing at the moment, isn't there?
Well, yeah, you know, how they can say that these old symbols are symbols of hate when they're basically just symbols of white people or of Christianity. I mean, the Celtic cross, that's specifically a symbol of Christianity, but it was used by white people before Christianity. It's just a symbol because it was a symbol, again, like the swastika, a symbol for resurrection. So this is why it became a symbol for the resurrection in Christianity. It all ties in together. Again, it just confirms the truth of the Christian story, the story of Christ, really.
Yeah.
It has this cross in it.
Like, with a Confederate flag as well, that's it's all tied into it. I mean, only this week they banned the advert in the cinemas. it's probably the first time this has happened there, but it's been happening in America for a while now, but this thing about religion, like they're trying to kill it, and when they try to put the advert in there, in a host of cinemas, a 30-second advert with a large prayer included, cinemas refused to play it. Which, what gives them the right? I've no idea, but certainly they have got away with it.
They're quite happy to shoehorn in Muslims into all of our television programs and all our soap operas and have them going out with white women and breeding with white women and teaching them the Quran, but you can't actually have someone saying the Lord's Prayer at the beginning of a film. What does that say? Well, you know who's against the Lord's Prayer and the Ten Commandments. There's only one group which tries to stamp them out.
In this country, I think Christianity now is probably at its weakest it ever has been. And I've never really classed England or America as a Christian country, and many things back this up lately. So it doesn't surprise me. I think it's just the start of, I mean, they've tried to take religion out of Christmas. They've started trying to ban nativity plays, etc. All on the excuse that it might upset people. But really, I know you're saying about the Muslims, but I haven't yet found a Muslim who has been offended by Christmas. But I do know the Jews have been trying for quite some time now to try and kill religion. I don't think they'll kill Christmas altogether because they make too much money. But, I do think they will try and kill the religious aspect to it. And they're doing quite well because if you go to places like Tesco and Asda now and try and get some kind of Christmas card, with Christ or some kind of religious flavour to it, extremely rare and extremely difficult.
They all have happy holidays on them or seasons greetings. Yeah. They won't actually say Merry Christmas. They say that they're worried about offending people. Well, what about offending the British people who started out as a Christian nation, who were the first nation to proclaim themselves Christian back in the first century, or second century, 170 AD, according to some reports, 156 AD, according to others. But still the first nation to proclaim themselves Christian. It's part of our heritage.
Yeah, but somewhere along the lines, I just feel that it went Masonic. America did start on Masonic. So, yeah, I mean, I went to Malta a while back and I went there and that felt like a Christian country. It had the whole thing. There were statues everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, and it just had a feel of Christianity. Where in England, there's always something there with a bit of a block on. With me, anyway, I don't see it.
Well, I think America started out with people. I think they started it out according to Christian values because it was started off by Christians that were fleeing persecution in their own lands, like the Puritans. They wanted to be more extreme versions, and Protestants wanted to be more extreme versions of Christianity without all the trappings.
Sure, yeah.
They did try to start things off according to Christian laws. But of course, then you got the Jews coming in saying, oh no, you've got to separate all that, separate the church from the state. And they did the same in Britain. They couldn't get into the British Parliament until they separated the church from the state. Because to get into the Parliament, you had to take a vow to uphold Christian laws. You had to take it on the Bible and say that you would uphold Christian laws, which were the laws of the land. Of course, the Jews couldn't do that because they don't follow Christian laws. So they lobbied the Parliament that were in power, and they said, no, we're not having it. We're not changing this. This is a very, very old vow that we all have to take. And then they waited until the next party got into power, as happens with democracy. You know, these parties are only in power for a few years, and then they're out, and another one comes in. And eventually they were able to buy the party off. They got the law changed, and then they were allowed into the government. And then we had Jews in our government deciding our laws. And that's, you know, that's how you get to today with the Lord's Prayer being banned. You know, I agree with you, Christianity is nothing like how it should be in this country. Sorry, go on.
No way, no. Well, I did some research on Hollywood a while back, and back in the 30s, they tried to bring the decadence in that they did in Germany and in other countries. But at the time, the Catholic Church was quite strong. In fact, it was really strong in them days. And one of the bishops came out and said to his diocese to avoid going to these cinemas because of the decadence they were trying to push. And in 1 week, I think Warner Brothers were losing like $100,000, amount close to that. And they soon realized that they had to back off, otherwise they would have been losing quite a lot of money over a period of time when other areas, other Catholic, strong Catholic areas, Chicago and other places would have come out as well. And they actually brought a lawyer as well, which kept the decency of Hollywood movies for quite some time. We're back in later on in the 60s when the Catholic Church was at its weakest. The Jews tried again to bring this decadence into Hollywood. Again, the Catholic Church tried to rally what had gone on in the 30s, but they weren't as strong this time and it fell apart, which that was the signal then for the Jews to go ahead. And one of the first movies that they brought out in the 60s, believe it or not, was a Holocaust movie where a woman showed all her breasts. Any complaints, nothing could stop this film from taking place. It took place, and then other soft porn movies came out following that. And the Catholic Church just didn't have that power anymore, where the Jews had already grown in strength, and pursued this, way from Hollywood ever since.
Yeah, the people that were called the most for the censorship of this were the Catholic groups. They had quite a strong, presence in America at that time. They did a lot of good. And it was mainly the Catholics that got rid of the Jews in, throughout Europe. In the Middle Ages, I don't know that there are any Protestant governments that did. It was all countries that once they had become Catholic.
Well, the WASP thing in America with the Rockefellers and whatever, they kind of had an alliance with the Jews. They were worried about the Catholics because the Catholics weren't taking any birth control, and so obviously, you know, the Protestants were, and obviously the birth rate was higher in the Catholic areas, but they managed to get that through the birth pill and you know, the contraceptives eventually, and the Catholic Church was obviously after World War II was weak as it's ever been. Masons infiltrated as well. So here we are today with a Pope what's going around pretending to be a Pope, in my opinion.
A Pope that goes into the mosque and prays in the mosque and says, "Who am I to judge whether homosexuality is wrong?" That's
New World Order Pope, really.
I wouldn't be surprised if he starts calling for female bishops as well, like they have in the Church of England now. And the first thing the female bishop does, is say that God should be called a she, and that they should change everything to say that God is a she.
Well, that's a Jewish thing as well, is that? I believe that comes from the Kabbalah.
Well, yeah, yes, but everything that causes us problems, it comes from,
everything
from the
comes
Jews.
From the Kabbalah, yeah, you're right, yeah.
Well, and the Kabbalah. If we didn't have these things, you wouldn't have these problems. Kabbalah goes right through with Freemasonry.
Exactly. There's your link, yeah.
Yeah,
goes into Hollywood. Crowley goes into it. It all comes together in my documentary eventually.
Yeah, well, that shows it all. That shows it all. Well, there's one other thing we wanted to cover, and that was the origin of the Black Sun symbol. Dennis,
someone asked me the link to Christianity, but like something that I felt you'd have more knowledge of than I.
And what I know from it, the Black Sun as a symbol that we're used to seeing was on the floor of the SS castle. They don't know if that was there before it became an SS castle or whether it was put there afterwards. But nobody really knows what it was a symbol for. And you've got Blavatsky that talks about something similar to the Black Sun. And a lot of the time you see eclipses, which is the sun being eclipsed. And you see this symbology, which is alchemy, which isn't really a symbol of the Black Sun. But the Black Sun seems to be showing a light that you can't really see. Like a light that gives us life. Because if you were to have a dead body, you could put that on a slab, sunlight could hit that dead body, but it's not going to come back to life. So the sun may appear to give us life, but it's not the real light that gives us life. It's not the spiritual light. And there are verses in the Bible which I think talk about the only way that you could symbolize these verses in the Bible would be to draw a black sun. And it's one of them is from 1 Timothy chapter 6:16, and it says, Christ only hath immortality, dwelling in the light, which no man can approach unto, whom no man hath seen, nor can see, to whom be honour and power everlasting. Amen. So that's saying a light which no one can see. Well, the only way you could symbolise that would be to draw a black sun, to have a black sun as a symbol. There's another one in Revelation 21:23, and the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. So the Lamb, Christ, is this light which it doesn't need the sun to light up, and which nobody can see. So I think, you know, how would you depict that? Well, a black sun. I think what that depiction there in the castle was depicting is the real light, the real thing that animates us. It's a symbol for God, basically. And it's the same language for that is used in the Bible. So I don't see it as being an anti-Christian thing at all. And I think the only way you could see it as an anti-Christian thing would be to be thinking, oh, well, it's black, as in the opposite of white, you know, black as in exactly. evil or wicked. But I don't think that's what it means at all, if it's the light which animates us. So I see it as a positive thing and a Christian symbol, to be honest.
Sure. Well, just one more question I got this week as well is, how the hell do you kill in the name of atheism? And I answered, it's easy. It's called communism. And he's come back and said, that's just killing. I said, no, that's atheist killing priests, raping nuns, burning churches in Spanish Civil War and in the Ukraine. The hate God period. He's come back and said, it's difficult to hate something that does not exist. Impossible, actually. And I've gone back and said, since when has God not existed, never been proven? And he's come back and says, I don't see how it's possible to hate something you don't believe in. And I've gone back and said, in the brief history, communists have gone to great lengths to rid the world of Christians, even though they don't believe in God themselves. 66 million World War II to start with. And he's just come back now and said, communists were very anti-monarchy and Christians were often allies to the European monarchies. Take a look at Spain and Russia. Whatever he means by that.
Well, I take it he thinks we should be against the monarchy. The monarchy is an institution which has been, the monarchy is an institution that's become corrupted. The same as the government is an institution which has become corrupted. And the same as the church is an institution which has become corrupted. But it doesn't mean that the ideals of the institution or the reason it was formed in the first place are negated. You might as well, if you're going to get rid of the government, you'll have anarchy. You know, if you get rid of God and the church, then it's not that you won't believe in God anymore. It's that you'll believe in anything. And you get rid of the monarchy and you have democracy. If you get rid of having one man in charge.
Rid of God, if you have a civilization, gets rid of God, anything then is acceptable. And this is why these civilizations who once had religion and then disowned it eventually vanished. Because if anything's acceptable, that's one horrific world facing Europe.
Well, you have to have somewhere that the authority comes from and some absolute laws and morals. This is why the UN doesn't have any legitimacy, doesn't have anywhere that gives it its power, whereas nations have sovereignty given to them under God. And they have kings given to them with power to execute the law under God. With laws given to them by God, as our ancestors confirmed and wrote down and followed. So you have this tradition, you have this authority, these guidelines that go back to God. You take God out of it, and all you've got is one man saying something. And saying, we'll do what thou wilt. Enforcing things just with the threat of force rather than with any moral legitimacy. And I think people might say, well, you know, how can you support the monarchy? But if you look at National Socialism, you had one man in charge, you know, you had one Führer in charge. Okay, he wasn't descended from a king, but he still had the rights that a king had, basically, what he said went, and the people were happy with that, and he was responsible for everything. This is the key. And he wasn't trying to make more for himself, he was trying to make the place better for his nation. And a king would be nobody without his subjects. And a Führer was nobody without his people. You know, that's the way that I see it. I see fascism as the ideal way that a monarchy should have worked and that probably did work in the past. But that's become corrupted, so we have a new form of it today, National Socialism, which is a form of fascism, like a brand of fascism, because it's not exactly fascism. It's more race-based. But it's still the putting the needs of the nation before the needs of the individual. And you have to have a focal point for that. So that's what the Führer was. And that's what the King was. And they should be of such a high moral standing that they are the example that everybody else looks to and follows. And they have to set an example. This is why this idea that we can have people in government that are just like the members of the public. It doesn't matter that they've got convictions for smoking cannabis. It doesn't matter that they've been caught watching porn films or caught with prostitutes, because that means they're just like the rest of us. Well, we don't want people just like the rest of us making the laws and being in charge. We want people that are far superior to the rest of us and have moral fortitude and don't do all those things. So they make good decisions.
We've got Cameron.
Yeah, Cameron with his pig's head. With his pig's head.
Arbor in the wings waiting. Yeah, I mean, well, let's face it, you know, democracy really is a dictatorship, because when Thatcher and one or two others can win elections on 30% or just over, that means that the 70% are being led by the 30%. Because the vote's been split with all the other parties. That's dictatorship. And then when they turn around and say, because we have been voted into power, we now have the right to make the decisions to go and bomb Syria or go and cut the credit tax, it just makes a farce, because these are individual subjects which have not been debated or voted on. But democracy makes it allowable for these psychopaths to use in that way. I mean, you look at Ormerod this week, where he's backtracked now on the tax credits, and everyone's thinking, oh, that's wonderful. But what they're not realizing is that the tax credits are going to be phased out in March anyway, and the replacement tax, what's going to come in, is going to rip just as many people off as what this would have done anyway. But the most annoying fact about Ormerod is that he's come this week to Parliament and said, I'm just going to leave it then. But that means that all that money that he was going to rake in, something like 175 billion, he didn't really need. He was just going to rob everybody, on the excuse of this tax credit, because of the austerity. And then all of a sudden, again, like we said early on, you know, they're going to go on this merry journey and go try and bomb Syria again. This money just appears out of thin air. So it just makes a mockery of democracy. And, I hope people realise that it really annoys me.
Well, that was the other subject you wanted to bring up, wasn't it? Is George Osborne, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, he's been causing problems this week again with cutting money out from people, and then saying, "Well, it can go back, and it's okay. We'll pay the people this." There was no need for it to have gone in the first place.
There was no need for it in the first place. And suddenly he's saying that austerity is over and it's going to be Conservatives are going to be the party for the working people. I've heard this BS for so long, so many times. I mean, we touched on the subject to Thatcher last week when we said she always used to come back from Europe saying, I've got a great deal, I'm the Iron Lady. She never once said, let's pull her to Europe, because, you know, she answers to her bosses and they want Europe as a Soviet Union, and she would have known that. It's just that we've been lied to from end of World War II to present day.
And a large part of this is the system itself, the parliamentary democracy system, the party system that splits the people up. As you're saying, you've got a party in power with 30% of the vote deciding everything for everybody else, where 70% of the people didn't agree. Well, the old way that...
not thought anyway.
Well, the old way that it used to be done, you had to persuade everyone to agree. That was how it had to be. Yeah. When you had one party or one Witten with the king, everybody had to agree. You had to persuade them. And once everybody had agreed, that was the decision that was made. The law was made. It was proclaimed throughout the land, and everybody had to obey it because there was no disagreement. And everybody was pulling in the same direction.
The way that Blair went into Iraq was dictatorship, without a shadow of a doubt, because he ignored all the arguments and just decided that they were going to go, as did Bush, which again is just dictatorship.
Well, it is a dictatorship that we live under, and it's just a sham saying that it is democracy and that we have any say. It's just for gullible fools to think that they have a say in it. If we did have a say, it would just be the rule of the mob. So what it is the rule of Jewish usurers behind the scenes with money-grabbing puppets up the front prostitutes.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, well, we're getting to the end here now, Dennis. We're getting right up close to the end of the podcast now. Do you want to let people know where they can find your work before we go?
Yeah. Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, .tv is where you can find the documentary, and Communism by the Back Door is still a work in progress, but you can call me Dennis Wise, channel on YouTube, and be up to date, up to part 12.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you for coming on again, Dennis, and thank you, listeners, for listening, and we'll be back next Friday at the same time, so tune in then.
Tuned into